ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादशङ्करम् लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We are seeing the fourth chapter of this Upanishad. So let us begin our, again, like usual, Shanti Mantra of this Upanishad also. Then we continue. Just two more mantras. Om Aapyayantu Mamangani वाक् प्राणश्चक्षुश्रोत्रमथो बलमिन्द्रियाणि च सर्वाणि सर्वम् ब्रह्मोपनिषदम् माहम् ब्रह्म निराकुर्याम् मा ब्रह्म निराकरोत् अनिराकरणमस्व निराकरणम् मे अस्तु तदात्मनि निरतेय उपनिषत्सु धर्मास्ते मयि सन्तु ते मयि सन्तु। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। इवन् दो द मेन् टीचिङ्ग् आफ् द उपनिषत् इस् ओवर् इन् फस्ट् टु चाप्टर्स्, Upanishad illustrated the same teaching through a story, the third chapter or third section, and in the fourth section, Upanishad presents how Brahma Vidya can earn glory for people who have jnanam, just by mentioning in three mantras how all the devas became exalted among all the devas. Then we saw the fourth section. Upanishad itself presented four meditations, two adhidaiva upasanam, one adhyatma upasanam, and also one guna visishta upasanam. Yesterday we stopped there. And we also saw the benefit of practicing that particular upasana, guna visishta upasana. In fact, there is an order. Even if it is not this upasana meditation, in whichever form we worship the Lord, because whoever worships the Lord in whichever form, definitely they will be blessed in that form. It's a fact. Ye ye yam yam tanum, there's a verse is there. Definitely there's no doubt. And once you know the law of karma, No karma ever goes waste. Worship or prayer being an action, it definitely never goes waste. Because law of karma reveals that any karma should definitely produce a result. So worship also is consciously, thoughtfully expressed. Action should produce, and upasanam is mental activity. So also worship, but it's a form of worship done only mentally. Therefore upasanam also is highly effective. And here, if we go by that law, definitely whoever worships the Lord in whichever form and they get blessed in that form is a fact. So if a person worships or meditates upon the Lord as the one who is endowed with all powers, the person also becomes strong. The powerful will be a powerful person at a certain degree. If a person worships the Lord as the one who is all-knowing and he be blessed with knowledge, a person worships as the one, any specific guna, if we see as Bhagavan, and definitely we'll be blessed with that guna, that attribute. That's why I said the person who worships the Lord or meditates upon the Lord sees the Lord as the one. I don't see the Lord in any given particular form. I don't see the Lord in any given sitting in any given place, but I always appreciate Bhagavan's presence in the form of any praiseworthy, laudable, applaudable, adorable thing in any being. Then that is guna visishta upasana. I see the Lord, anything nice, anything exalted is a guna visishta upasana. And we saw that a person, the mantra itself says, sarvani bhutani ha enam abhisam vanchanti. I told you the abhi prefix should go with the verb samvanchanti, abhisam vanchanti. Means this person who practices such meditation will become center of attraction. Everybody will be hanging around the person. That everybody will like that person. Okay, we saw that. Now, we shall go into the seventh mantra. So here is a student who is sitting in front of the teacher and who heard the whole Upanishadic teaching. Now he is asking the teacher, Upanishadam bhoho bruhi iti. Bhoho Upanishadam Bruhi. Bhoho Upanishadam Bruhi. Bruhi means may you say, may you speak. May you teach Upanishad. He's asking. The teacher says, next line is teacher's answer. Uktate Upanishad. Uktate Upanishad. See, the Upanishad is a feminine gender word. Brahma Vidya is a feminine gender word. Brahma Jnanam is a neuter noun. The word Upanishad also means what? Brahma Vidya. Upanishad actually means Brahma Vidya. And Upanishad is a Takaranta Strilinga Shabdaha. Feminine gender word. Because Shruti itself is a feminine gender word. Therefore, it says Upanishad Ukta. Ukta means Upanishad has been taught, already revealed. Okay? Upanishad has been revealed. And the teacher himself says, what Upanishad has been taught to you? Brahmim Vava Te Upanishadam Abhruma Iti. I have taught you Upanishad. Upanishad has been taught by me to you. And which means Upanishad wherein the absolute reality implied by the term Brahman has been analyzed. Brahman has been discussed. The subject matter of the Upanishad I discussed is what? Brahma. Therefore, Brahmim Upanishad. Brahmim Vava Te Upanishadam Bruma. Which Upanishad, what Upanishad I have taught you? There's no Upanishad means Brahma Vidya. Here Upanishad, wherein the nature of reality is unfolded. Brahman has been discussed. Subject matter of Upanishad is Brahma. Upanishad has been already taught by me. Okay. In fact, this is the portion Shankara writes, a long commentary, and where he says, actually, instead of making it too long, I just make it clear for you. See, having been in the class, having listened to the whole teaching, a student currently gets up and asks the teacher, teach me Upanishad. So, what Shankaracharya writes, he doesn't take it that way. The student is not an unintelligent student. How he takes it, the word Upanishad also means some upasanani, upasanam. And second thing, everything is not meant for everything, everybody. Certain things are not revealed. So here, Shankaracharya takes in such a way, Upanishad also means a secret. You know, secret knowledge. Even though Upanishad actually means Brahma Vidya, Upanishad also means secret knowledge. But Shankaracharya takes in such sense, what he wants to know is, listen to me carefully. The subject matter of the Upanishad is unfolded. Subject matter does become very clear. When the teacher who knows the methodology is teaching, when the student who is prepared is sitting and listening, the teaching, the vision should happen straight away. There's no reason for the student not to have any vision. The student is prepared minded. Otherwise, definitely he needs mananam and also needs dhyasanam. Still, knowledge should take place. What is asked is, even though the teaching is heard, the whole teaching is given, done, sometimes the students are deprived of enjoying the benefit of the knowledge. Even after having heard the teaching, I have heard the whole teaching, still my individual, I'm not able to resolve my individuality. Still, I have all the problems an ignorant person has. So such a problem comes. The reason is, all of us have our subconscious. All of us naturally have our unconscious. And the subconscious, actually, all of us have unresolved childhood issues also. And those unresolved childhood issues which are dormant in our underneath, and they all surface. I'll give you an example. When you were very young, a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, even, you know, from the time you picked up ahankara, you know, they say the child picks up ahankara only at the age of 2. So they also call this second year as a terrible 2. Because until 2, the child does not have I sense in the body emergence complex. What? This is mine. That sense of possession and the I sense is not there for any child until child becomes 2. So only after when the child becomes 2, then he picks up ahankara. Ahankara means identity comes. Otherwise the baby is 9, innocent. no ahankara, no identity also. See, some, but it's not case. So that is why the child has no problem. The child can run on the road. No, naked. The child can walk free. There is no shame because no identity. And then, suppose the parents have to go somewhere. The child wants to go with them. They can't take. They dump the child to somebody. And the mother goes. Mother goes, or father goes, and the child wants to go. Especially when the father starts the car, the child wants to go with the child. Sometimes, I'm just giving an example, I'm not saying exactly the same. And the father will say, no, I'm going to the doctor to injection. Always injection children will be scared. And he goes for shopping. He goes for shopping, the child knows the father is going for shopping, and he wants to go. And you tell a lie. Because you can't take satyam vada dharmam chara, there the value cannot be followed. Casually the child says, okay, the mother tells, I'm not going to the market, I'm just come back soon, okay? Tell lies. The child, the father, mother walks in with lots of shopping. The child doesn't know how to express. Child understands they told a lie. This is a pain. Sometimes, suppose the child grown up, they'll cry, oh, you went to the market, you didn't tell me, they'll cry. And then, of course, you pat and then you backstroke and then hug and then give them chocolate, make the child forget. Sometimes the child doesn't use it, but it goes in. The pain comes, but we don't even know. But then what happens, because seeing the biscuits and chocolates and all those toys and things, the child forgets. The pain is there, the pain is forgotten. What happens to such pain? Like so many occasions, I'm going to give a small occasion. So many occasions the child picks up. Such pain which goes to subconscious. It's there. Unresolved childhood issue. Like that, many occasions. Not purposely they don't do anything. When the children feel rejected, alienated, ignored, also sometimes. But definitely the child who comes to Upanishad class wouldn't have had such problem. But still, some unresolved issue, even after that. Sometimes, even when we go through any problem, some pain comes because some reason, some situation, external situation triggers the pain. And then, actually we can just ignore it, overlook it. But we will not let it go. We'll hold on to it again and again and again. We'll be brooding over the past. Even as a grown-up person, this brooding over the past and again not being able to let go of anything is expression of unresolved childhood issue. So what happened, whatever it is, the childhood issues, the pain, and our own janmantra karmas, some papa karmas, knowingly and unknowingly done, they all can become some sort of impediments, obstacles in assimilating the teaching. For which the student, is very much disturbed. Very much disturbed. So assimilation of teaching definitely involves maturity. Maturity means understanding of subtle facts, acceptance of the facts. So certain degree of dispassion, certain degree of sensitivity means a person is able to reach out to help seeing other person's pain. A person must have certain degree of sensitivity. So compassion, accommodation, all these are expressions of maturity. So mental refinement, so mental purity and steadiness, antakarana shuddhi and aishwaryam. So mental preparedness we've been discussing all through. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna repeatedly, in every chapter he discusses this discipline of karma yoga. I tell you, Bhagavad Gita is very important. Why? Even though Upanishads teach, all Upanishads state, one must be qualified to attain jnanam, to enjoy the benefit of jnanam. Studying is easy, understanding is easy. Even after having understood the teaching, one may not be able to assimilate the teaching, that one may not be able to enjoy the benefit of the teaching. That means one has to take care of one's mind, where the vision should be assimilated so one can enjoy the benefit of that knowledge. So mental preparedness is so important. That's why Gita teaches how to become mentally pure and steady. Upanishads only reveal one must be qualified, one must be mentally pure and steady. This is said in the Upanishad, but Bhagavad Gita makes it very clear repeatedly how one can become mentally pure and steady. The preparedness. That is where the discipline of karma yoga itself is repeatedly emphasized as a main discipline. So here, maybe the student wants to know, is there anything else I should know? Is there anything which is still, is there anything secret? It is still that is not been known. Of course, the teaching is very clear, teaching is known. But if I had to benefit from the teaching, should I know anything else? He did not ask, should I do anything else? Because for moksha, it is very clear. Jnanam itself is moksha. We understood so, in three occasions we understood here also, in previous Upanishad also. We saw how knowledge need not be combined with the meditation or any action to enjoy, to attain moksha. Knowledge itself is moksha. Jnana karma samuchyaha. We saw knowledge need not be combined with any action. We saw that knowledge itself is moksha. Knowledge is identical with moksha because they are two different things. At least in karmakanda, once you study karmakanda, you attain jnanam after karmakanda, knowledge itself will not give you any benefit. If you study karmakanda, you learn all the know-how of rituals. If you don't perform, you cannot enjoy the benefit. So knowledge has to be implemented in the form of karma to enjoy the benefit. Perform the ritual. I mentioned this before also. It's not enough if you read the recipe book and learn how to cook. You know different varieties of recipes, how to cook, what food and all that. If you don't do anything, still knowledge of how to cook will not appease your hunger. Will it do? It won't. That knowledge has to be implemented in the form of action. You have to go to the kitchen and pick up all the ingredients and do. You work. Only then you can benefit. So knowledge of action will be effective, useful only when that knowledge is implemented in the form of action. You all come here and learn. Some people come here, yoga, attend your TTC, learn yoga. They go back and don't do anything. No practicing yoga every day. What will happen? What benefit they can, only 1 week, 10 days they are here, seriously study. They learnt here. Go back. they don't practice. They can't enjoy the benefit of what they have learned here. So knowledge of doing something should be implemented into practice to enjoy the benefit. Similarly here. But Upanishad Jnanam need not be practiced. There is no practical. Upanishad Jnanam itself is Mokshaha. Final teaching is what? Mahavakya Jnanam. Aham Brahmasmi. Tattvamasi is unfolded. Aham Brahmasmi is very clear how essentially I am non-different from the whole. Non-different from Ishvara. All that is here is Ishvara. I am the whole. That is the teaching. Vision itself is freedom. It need not be combined with anything. But for a person to enjoy the benefit of such assimilated vision, definitely one must have that disposition, mental disposition. That is why taking care of mind is so much emphasized. For which, of course, you all know very well, the Karma Yoga and Upasanam. Karma Yoga, when I say practice of karma and upasanam with the proper attitude, becomes yoga. All disciplines are always prescribed. Similarly, here also, Upanishad, if you take the meaning of the word Upanishad as a secret, as Shankaracharya mentions. So, Upanishad also wants to present some, teach some karma. I said only one more mantra, two more mantras we have. Disciplines, values, in fact karma yoga are prescribed by the Upanishad. So now Upanishad, the teacher is going to teach. In the next mantra. So living the disciplined life is important, very, very important. We can see here, tasyai tapaha damaha karma iti pratishtha vedaha sarvangani satyam ayatanam. Okay. So definitely one has to live a life of discipline. One must live a disciplined life. How one can sort out any obstacle that one has in assimilating the teaching, thereby enjoy the benefit of the teaching? I can briefly say, living a life of karma yoga. So doing karma and practicing upasanam will help. In fact, the ashramas are designed in such a way. So after brahmacharyam, as a brahmachari, the student's duty is study, understand. As to brahmachari also, he lives a very highly disciplined life when he is given to the study of the scriptures. Afterwards, we see the disorder now. So karma yoga is actually mainly followed by a grihastha, householder, mainly. But even people like us now who are not into householder's life, also we have to live a life of karma yoga, understanding the meaning of what is karma yoga. So mainly we see predominant, most of society, everybody cannot come and stay in an ashram and gurukulam. They can't become, lead life like this. Everybody cannot become that. They have to live regular, how the normal life they have to live. So for people, so grihastha ashrama is always a karma pradhanaha ashramaha, where more and more of duties and activities, karma pradhanaha ashramaha grihastha ashramaha, and upasana pradhanaha ashramaha vanaprastha ashramaha. And jnana pradhanaha ashrama sannyasa ashrama. What does it mean? When we say pradhanaha means a householder is predominantly is involved in more and more of activities. It means in all the three ashramas, people of all three ashramas have to follow all the three. Not that they don't need that. All of them need all the three. But as a householder, what is predominant in his life is karma. Worship is little less. Jnanam also, of course, he is studying, being exposed to this teaching, understanding karma yoga. This person still predominantly lives a life of karma yoga. Because as a householder means lot of duties, responsibility. The more the responsibilities a person has, the more activities also the person has. Then if a person is relatively mature and he can, because having lived a very active, vigorously active life, and the person cannot overnight retire from everything, so he has to retire gradually. Therefore, vanaprastha ashrama, the next stage of life, the person lives a more of life of meditation and worship, involving himself in less activities. So, which is the, what is predominantly the person is doing, that differentiates the person's ashrama. Is it clear? Now, the person having lived, gone through vanaprastha ashrama, living more meditative life, worshipful, prayerful life, involving himself in less activities, and that person gradually can totally retire, take to a life of renunciation, where a person is totally involved only in the pursuit of knowledge to the exclusion of all other duties, gradual. See, withdrawing oneself from activities also must be very gradually it happen. Otherwise, people will go mad. Nowadays, even places like India, the police officers, when they retire from jobs, they've been so active. When they retire from the job, they don't know, immediately next day have to sit at home. 57, 60 years old, okay, retiring from job. So busy whole life. And after retirement, people, when they sit at home, some people go mad. They don't know what to do. That's when nowadays they start teaching. Or before even retirement, they give some orientation programs so that they don't go mad. Not going mad in the sense what? People become depressed and they don't know how to handle. That's why Upanishad, actually in Shastram, teaches how to gradually withdraw oneself from activities. Action is so important. At the same time, we should do all activities, you know. At the same time, as you are doing, gradually one should learn to withdraw also, not overnight. So all the ashramas. What I want to say here, why karma is important? Upasanam and karma. Mundane activities, worldly activities, duties, and also these religious activities, worship, prayer, etc. And along with the mental activity practice of meditation, one has to go through gradually in order to become qualified. So we study, while studying Upanishad also, now we are all studying, being exposed to the teaching also, one must definitely live a life of karma yoga to prepare one's mind. Now one day I will become prepared minded, then I'll start studying. No, not like that. You can study now, must study now, even to understand what karma yoga is. Upanishad, we can study the shastram, but still we must live a disciplined life of karma yoga to prepare our minds to be able to enjoy the benefit of the teaching. Is it clear? So here Upanishad presents here tapaha. So tapaha means living a disciplined life. Living a disciplined life. Aware a person is conscious of being moderate. Following tapas in life means being given to the discipline of moderation. In sleeping, in eating, in even being active. Remember where Krishna mentions in 6th chapter? Yukta hara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta. In sleep also, how much you must sleep, not oversleep, not keep awake whole night. There must be moderation in everything we are doing. Even resting, we must rest enough, we must do enough, we must not be overdoing things. At the same time, we should not be totally inactive also. In activities, there must be moderation. In sleep, there must be moderation. In eating, there must be moderation. In everything, one must be given to the discipline of being moderate. So, this is tapas. Why? Because without having these disciplines, a person is not prepared. Always, even to construct a building, you can't simply just arrange bricks and put a cement. There must be a very strong foundation. Dig the land, dig the earth, and even prepare a very strong foundation. Only on that foundation the building has to be built. The construction must be done so that the building will be strong and firm. Here also, the life of disciplines is the foundation on which the pursuit of jnanam can be built. Attainment, so knowledge can be, actually this attainment of Atma Jnanam, enjoying the benefit of Jnanam, is like a construction based on the strong foundation. And for the strong foundation here is living a disciplined life. So tapas, in fact, one of our Swamis beautifully defines it. If I think I cannot live without something, and I must learn to be without that. So willful self-denial of certain things in order to establish one's capacity to be with or without things. Tapas. Tapas also means commitment. So tapas is very important. Then we have, next is Lord Karma. Tapaha, We can include here Shamaha, Damaha, Uparamaha, Titiksha, all disciplines. All disciplines also come under here, the Tapaha itself. Shamaha, Damaha, the word Damaha comes separately here. All the disciplines. So, Damaha, next discipline is sensory discipline, Damaha. I'm not too elaborating on this, it's because these disciplines are already discussed. Damaha, mastery over one sense organs. Damaha. So, how I use my sense organs? If I follow Damaha, I avoid overindulgence in anything. Even practice a discipline of celibacy. Avoid all sorts of improper relationships. A clean life. So, this Damaha, mastery over one's sense organs. Even to practice Damaha, we also need another discipline, mental discipline, Shamaha. Shamaha, Damaha, Dantihi, Shantihi, same words. Shantihi, Shamaha, Dantihi, Damaha. Two different masculine and feminine words, that's all. Shamaha, mastery over one's ways of thinking. One's thoughts. And how we can have Shamaha? Shastram, if you read the basic textbook, you'd have learned all this. To be frank, Damaha, Tapaha, Karma, these can be reduced to what? Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatihi. That's why I said in the beginning itself, Vairagyam. Vairagyam, actually dispassion, does not mean simply, you know, being adamant. People mistake Vairagyam for being adamant. Being adamant is not Vairagyam. Being dispassionate means being a mature individual. That being clear about what I want and what can give me what I want. You are very clear what I ultimately seek is moksha, and jnanam alone can give me what I want ultimately. Naturally, anything else which cannot give me what I want will not be my interest, object of my interest. So, naturally, we grow out of desire for things which cannot give me what we want. Nobody tells you not to have a desire for things. We ourselves naturally grow out of desire for certain things. Once we know the limitations of those objects, that they cannot give me what I really want. This understanding is what? Maturity. They cannot give me what I want. So I'm not interested in that. Then this, you have grown out of desire for those things. This is dispassion. In fact, dispassion, I explained even in my previous class, I remember very well, not only growing out of likes and, okay, being free from the hold of both passion and aversion also. Vairagyam implies even being free from the hold of aversion. There is really a person whose aim is moksha and whose aim is to assimilate the teaching, who just wants to have the wisdom, who wants to have the vision assimilated. But the person is focused. For him, there is no need for him to have him or her to have any hatred, aversion towards anybody, anything in the world. It's not possible. why a person who is aspiring for jnanam and moksha cannot have any aversion towards anything, anybody? There is no need. Because aversion, what is aversion if you understand? Aversion is possible only if I think other person or something, a given thing, a given situation is responsible for my unhappiness. Why? What I am going through, what, my suffering is caused by some other person's action, some other person's behavior, or somebody else is responsible, is cause for my suffering, what I go through in my life. If we think all my suffering is because of other person, because of this situation, because of this thing, this is really wrong perception of the world. Nobody is responsible for what we go through in life. But we always try to put the blame on others. That is when something called an aversion is possible. Anger, aversion, hatred. I hate this person. I don't like this person at all. Such an aversion is possible only when we see that other person or his actions or his behavior or something, situation is responsible for my suffering, for my pain. But Shastra makes it very clear. Any pain we go through is purely because of our lack of objectivity. Lack of objectivity. We are not able to be objective towards things and situations and people. We internalize situations. That is why we go through pain. And we think others are responsible. This is called aversion, isn't it? Whereas once, as a spiritual aspirant, being given to the study of the scriptures, knowing the value of knowledge, being committed to the pursuit of knowledge, you know, jnanam is the only solution. Only in assimilated vision of the Upanishadic teaching, you can have completely different perspective, you can be objective, then the freedom is there only in assimilation of the teaching. The whole problem is because of your wrong perception of the world. If you understand this fact, nobody actually is responsible for whatever you are going through. The problem is in your wrong perspective, not on the part of anybody else in the world. If this fact is understood, definitely as a spiritual aspirant, the person who is given to the pursuit of this knowledge, who wants to assimilate this teaching, definitely can't afford to have any aversion towards anybody in the world. It's a question of understanding, it's a maturity. It's a maturity. I have nothing, I have no hatred towards anybody in the world. If at all I suffer, it's all Parabdha. So I'm going through Parabdha. Prasada. Take it as prasada. This person has been sent, this person, situation only instrumental in triggering, you know, in helping me go through what I go through. You see, like that, there won't be any aversion. So not having any aversion, also passion for anything in the world, is dispassion. Usually we think dispassion means only not being passionate. That's not true. Even aversion is very important. We have to take care of this also. There's vairagyam. Isn't it? One that is there. And a commitment to... How can we have shamaha then? So vairagyam will be possible. There's also damaha. It included here. Okay? Then shamaha only by living life of values. There's no way of managing your thoughts at all. Shamaha means a mental discipline. Mental discipline means having mastery over one's ways of thinking, the thoughts, And having mastery over one's thoughts means, how are we going to have mastery over our thoughts? Shastram says only in jnanam we will have absolute mastery over our thoughts. Why? Thoughts will resolve. We don't need to manage them. In jnanam. But until jnanam, to have enjoy the benefit of this jnanam, I must have shamaha. I must have mastery over my thinking and ways, all the thoughts which arise, all the emotions which I cannot undo, I cannot destroy. I cannot destroy any of my emotions. It's a serious thing. I study Shastram, I understand the teaching, but still unresolved anger, all from subconscious comes up, anger comes. When anger comes, the anger is expressed in the form of my words, or screaming, or shouting, or you know, then what happened? There's no thinking how much other person will feel offended, no thinking there. There's no intention of hurting. This is completely reaction. Anger is reaction. Anger is reaction. It's not a thoughtful action. A thoughtful means there'll be action. When you are not thinking, when anger gets expressed, there's no thinking involved. That's why it's a reaction. Something goes and triggers from our subconscious. If you understand this fact, even you can accommodate the person who gets angry also. Otherwise, very difficult to put up. People who are very angry, they cannot make many friends. They cannot make relationship with other people. Because all the time a person gets angry and screams and shouts, people will run away from the person. Who will like? In spite of, even if the person has a lot of many desirable qualities, one needs to, even to accommodate the person, must have understanding of why anger is, what anger is, understanding the person from the other person's background, then being accommodative. Isn't it? So to become, you must be too magnanimous, too big to understand other person from his or her background. Okay, you know, let go of the situation, then move on. Otherwise, we'll be alienating the whole world. Okay, which means, what I'm saying, these emotions, managing one's emotions, managing one's thoughts is very important, which is actually relative mastery over one's thoughts, which is mastery over one's mind. That is what is meant by the word shamaha. And that shamaha is possible only if you are prayerful, worshipful, seek Bhagavan's grace and strength to live a life of dharma and try, not try, one must definitely live a life of values. Commitment to live a life of values. I will not hurt anybody. I should not hurt anybody knowingly. Unknowingly also I should not hurt. That must be my words. What I speak, what I do, should not hurt anybody else, others' feelings. If I'm conscious of not hurting others, definitely I can follow all my other values. Not offending, not hurting. See, that is why sadhu life means, no, a person who is given to the pursuit of knowledge means definitely one must take care of not hurting. This ahimsa. Anybody should take care of this ahimsa. Not hurting other person's feelings. Even if a other person has done something wrong, still we don't need to. There's no point in expressing my anger. It will only damage the relationship. It's not going to get you anything. You will feel more offended after a behavior. And other person who becomes the victim of your problem also will be offended. It's unnecessary pain. Lot of it. Therefore, managing one's emotions, likes and dislikes. Very strong likes and dislikes. Anger, fear, anxiety, jealousy, hatred, all these, you know, even our pain, managing our emotions is very important, and that is possible only if we seriously commit ourselves to live a life of values. These were why I should live a life of values. I should live a life of values to be able to manage my thoughts. That's Vishamaha. This is where we understand the value of values. Until now you know the values. I know I should speak the truth. I should not tell a lie. I know I should not hurt others. I know I should not cheat others. I know all these values. How do you know all these values? Because I know how others should behave with me. Therefore, based on what I expect from others in terms of behavior, I know exactly what is right and what is wrong. But the question of my behavior comes, I am not conscious of what I am doing. This is how we must take care of. So living a life of values means living one's life consciously. Life of alertness, all tapaha also. Isn't it? Living one's life consciously. We may think, this is all very, very important. Aham Brahmasmi Jnanam is very easy. This is where the difficulty is. Difficulty is here. So, Shamaha. So, Tapaha, Damaha, Shamaha, I included here, Dama itself. Damaha stands for Samaha and Damaha, everything. Then karma. Karma, performing all one's duties. Performance of duties. Not shirking one's responsibilities and duties. Doing one's duties properly in conformity with dharma. Karma. So Shankaracharya says, he just says only one word. Tapaha, karya indriya manasam samadhanam. The one word tapaha itself, he says, karya indriya manasam samadhanam. Taking care of your speech, taking care of your behavior, activities, taking care of your mind. Okay, so being a moderate in everything that I need to do. Even speaking. Vaktapas. Everything is tapaha, damaha, upashamaha, he says. Then karma, all agnihotradi means doing one's nitya karma, naimittikam karma. What I have to do, the activities which have to be done occasionally, activities which have to be done regularly, nitya karma, naimittika karma, doing all one's duties. Karma iti pratishtha vedaha. Now, in this context, what it says, these disciplines are likened to the four legs. Then you must ask the question, what is four legs of what? Brahma Vidya itself is likened to a cow. Brahma Vidya is likened to a cow. The cow's body is Brahma Vidya. Knowledge of reality, that is what our moksha, isn't it? And the four legs of the cow, all these disciplines discussed are like the four legs of the cow on which the cow stands. How can the cow stand? The cow has to stand. For which the four legs are important. And what are the four legs? All these disciplines. Shamaha, Damaha, Uparamaha, Titiksha, Shraddha, Samadhanam. We can say tapaha, damaha, karma, iti, it is mentioned here. The disciplines are like the four legs of the Brahma Vidya cow. So So cow's body and the four legs. And what about the face and tail and other extra things? Yes, all those are like the Vedangani or like the other limbs, Vedangas, other disciplines, or like the Vedangas, six Vedangas, etc., ancillaries, auxiliary sciences, or like the other limbs of the cow. Now, you know what is the cow shed? This Brahma Vidya cow, having all the disciplines as the legs, Vedangas as its other limbs, needs a very good shed. Otherwise, cow will run away. Cow shed is truthfulness. Satyamayatanam. Vedaha sarvangani satyam ayatanam. See, Upanishad, there's no complete sentence. Vithal Shankara's commentary, how can you understand? Satyam ayatanam. Ayatanam means is abode, where this Brahma Vidya cow is looked after. See, Brahma Vidya has to be preserved, protected, for us to enjoy the benefit. If knowledge goes away from us, how can you benefit from knowledge? Satyam is the ayatanam. Ayatanam, an abode. Truthfulness. See, truthfulness in speech is so important, and all the Upanishads highlight this value of truthfulness. And this is the difficult thing. As I said, sometimes unintentionally, even the small things, we happen to tell lies. Really, a person who is serious about his jnanam definitely must strictly follow this discipline of truthfulness in speech. Honesty, sincerity. We need not speak all the truths we know. Sometimes people mistake. Being truthful means you must speak everything. Just vomit out everything you know. It may cause damage again. Remember, you must, if you open your mouth and speak, say something, that must be the truth. But you need not speak all the truths. Satyam bruyat. Priyam Bruyat. What you speak must be the truth, and it must be definitely pleasing. I speak the truth, so I hurt the person. You know? No. Na Bruyat Asatyam Apriyam. Our words should not be hurtful. And words should not be untruth. What we speak should not be untruth. So truthfulness is so important, because it is the truthfulness, this discipline of truthfulness in speech is emphasized in all Upanishads. And here, the Brahma Vidya has to, because it's all about the fact, what you are essentially, what the world is essentially. It is about the truth, the ultimate truth of the whole. The knowledge is of the ultimate truth of the whole. Truth, no? The word truth, the truth is reality, also is truth. And here I am talking about the discipline of truthfulness in speech, satyam. For us to have the knowledge of the ultimate truth of the whole, and to preserve it, to enjoy the benefit of it, the important discipline is what? Being truthful in speech. So being truthful means being conscious of what I am speaking. Being conscious means, in fact, we must be conscious in doing, thinking, speaking. But here, being conscious of what I am speaking involves, you can't just speak anything. You are very alert. Being truthful in speech means being conscious of what I'm speaking. Being conscious of what I'm speaking means being alert. Being alert means, no, I unknowingly also I try not to hurt. Not to cause any problems. Therefore, and that discipline is high import, is said here, and the mantra says, Satyam Ayatanam, Satyam Ayatanam. For this Upanishad, the cow, Brahma Vidya cow, which stands on the four legs of all disciplines, and which has other limbs as the Vedangas, and this cow rests under the shed of truthfulness. Satyam is the shed. Suppose I follow everything. I'm a little careless. I do not tell lies always. Occasionally I'm a little, you know. Shastram says this cow will run away. Shastram is emphasizing Brahma Vidya will not work for a person who is not truthful. Even though we understood the value of being truthful under the values, but here the specifically Upanishad says Satyam Ayatanam. Then what happens? We follow this discipline. Yetaihi samskritasya sattva shuddhi dvara tattva jnana utpattihi drishta. Tattva jnana utpattihi. Knowledge of the truth rises for the person who has this sattva shuddhi. Sattva shuddhi dvara tattva jnana utpattihi. Knowledge, one can enjoy the benefit of knowledge only if my mind is adequately pure and steady. Repeat, repetition. But important. So Upanishad repeats. I am reading only one or two lines of some. Shankaracharya uses another term, samskritasya. Samskritaha purushaha. The person who is refined adequately, the raw-headed person, immature person, dull-witted person, unrefined, uncultured, uncivilized brute has to become a highly refined person. Person of refined personality. Samskritaha. How does one become a refined person? Only by living a life of karma yoga. To make it very simple, he becomes refined minded. Samskritaha. How do you measure the refinement of a person? Not seeing the person's physical body, how tall, how fat, how thin, how good looking. Refinement mind, isn't it? Samskritasya sattva shuddhi dvara tattva jnana utpatti. Therefore, all this knowledge is established, okay, on these four legs of values. Got the meaning of every word? Tas tapaha damaha karmeti pratishta vedaha sarvangani Satyam Ayatanam. In fact, as a spiritual person, once a goal is clear, I am concluding, last mantra I am going to do now, ninth mantra. Once the end, what am I living this life for, is clear, we must be convinced. There should not be any doubt. What am I living this life for? If you still have any doubt, am I really aspiring for moksha? Am I really aspiring for happiness? Am I really aspiring for absolute peace of mind? You must be convinced, yes, that is what is my ultimate goal. There should not be any doubt. Ultimately, what I seek is the non-arriving, non-departing, everlasting peace and happiness. Through all my pursuits, through all that I do, I will be convinced. If that is the goal, and you also understand knowledge is the only means for that. In fact, knowledge itself is moksha. In fact, ignorance, how we saw elaborately in the very beginning, how ignorance is the root cause, even though there's immediate cause of everything. Every problem has immediate cause. And the root cause is ignorance. Therefore, unless and until ignorance is resolved, we never destroy ignorance, okay? In discovering what is, this ignorance of what is resolved, becomes resolved. And the perspective changes. What is freedom? Don't attain freedom. And therefore, all that we need is jnanam. And this jnanam has to happen only in this mind. Because it is the mind where the reality is available as the knower subject. That's what Upanishad has been teaching us from the day beginning. That is where you have to discover, that is how you have to dwell upon what you discover, the nature of what you discover, that is where you have to assimilate, that is how the whole perspective has to change. Therefore, the mental purity and mental steadiness is so important, for which Upanishad emphasizes living a life of values and disciplines, living a life of karma and upasana. Is it clear? Now, the teaching is over. Concluding mantra of this Upanishad. In fact, according to Shruti, no student is, for understanding purpose, we say the students are of three levels: Uttama Adhikari, Manda Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari. The person who is adequately qualified is Uttama Adhikari. And he can direct straight away be given to the discipline of pursuit of knowledge. And there is a Madhyama Adhikari, he can be given to the discipline of meditation. And Manda Adhikari, the person who is still not ready at all, for him, Karma Yoga is discipline. So in Upanishad, when it is classified, categorized like this, the students are categorized. Does it mean Upanishad sees somebody as inferior and superior? No. The one who is Uttama Adhikari now, Uttama Adhikari must have been Manda Adhikari once upon a time. Uttama Adhikari must have been Madhyama Adhikari once upon a time. Manda Adhikari one day becomes Uttama Adhikari. The person who is in 10th standard, 10th class, is not superior to the one who is in 5th standard. One day he was in 5th and he has come to 10th standard 5 years ago. And now one who is in 5th one day will go to 10th. What's the big deal about it? So Shruti Mata does not see anybody as inferior or superior. But the categorizing like this as Uttama Adhikari, Manda Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari is only for us to choose what is appropriate for me to prepare myself, to excel. Okay? The prescription of different medicines by doctor to different patients is to help every patient. So Shastram prescribes these lifestyles. Okay, live a life karma yoga, practice meditation, follow these disciplines. And Upanishad says, it's all Upanishad is a mother who thinks of all our wellness. Therefore prescribes all these different disciplines. And Upanishad in Karma Kanda, the teaching is completely different. In Jnana Kanda, completely different. There you read all Taittiriya Upanishad mantras and the Sikshavalli mantras. There a student is, before he leaves at the Gurukulam, after his study, he finished his teaching studies and he goes back. On the valedictory address, the teacher says, go back, you know. And he says how we should live a life of values, disciplines. Even in Karma Kanda, one should get married, one should have children, and one should have this, one should... Everything is emphasized in Karma Kanda. And the same Shruti in Jnana Kanda says, what is the use of having all these things? Na karmana na prajayadhane na tyage naike amatattama nashu. He says, what is karma palam, what is ritual for, what is upasam for, what is wife for, what is family for, putreshna, vitteshna, lokeshna, vyuttaya, completely different. Means, suppose somebody reads with the proper understanding, they'll get confused, my God. Shruti says that, Shruti also says this. How should I take? Which is correct? A, solve medicines for different patients. The prepared, unprepared, who is yet to become prepared. So Upanishad, see the way the Shastram provides like IKEA for everybody's needs. Everybody's needs are taken care of. But you only should take what is suitable for you. Isn't it? When I go with little money, and I should go for buying something very expensive one. I should only look for something what is within my range. That if I am not prepared, I should know where I stand. I am not prepared, let me choose Karma Yoga. Living a life of Karma Yoga is not inferior. A Karma Yogi is not inferior at all. Actually, following every discipline involves effort and very difficult. Living a life karma yoga is not an easy joke. In being, no, even practicing meditation is not an easy joke. Not an easy joke. See, just try to sit for half an hour, 5 minutes together. People can't even sit. Isn't it? I'm talking about people, you must be knowing, people who come for this, the courses. They come and learn how to sit quietly. That's why I say it's very important. Being part of such courses, that they will never learn how to be quiet. Coming here, staying, doing yoga, being disciplined, following these things, only completely out of the world. It will take ages for them to learn to sit quietly and also. These courses are, that's why, very, very important. So, what I'm saying, Shastram provides, we should not think Shastram contradicts. All these different disciplines are prescribed. Karma Yoga is for the one who is yet to become prepared. And Jnana Yoga is for the one who is prepared. And Jnanam is for Moksha. This we must understand how the teaching is given here. So, okay, Shruti definitely does not think Karma Yogi is inferior, Jnana Yogi is superior. Not at all. She's just the mother who wants to look after all her children by giving them what they need, helping them grow, ultimately enabling them accomplish their own swarupam, their nature, happiness. Okay? Mother wants the child just, she wants the child only to be happy. That's what Shruti does. So Shruti, that's why when we do, we have to understand what is being said, what is there. What is said for whom? That must be very clear. Is it okay? now. Suppose a person lives a life of karma yoga, he follows disciplines and he attains jnanam, enjoys the benefit of the teaching, what will happen to that person? That is, with that Upanishad ends. Okay, let us see that mantra now. Yova
Yetamevam
Veda
Apahatya
Papmanam
Anante
Swarge
Loke
Jeye
Pratitishthati
Pratitishthati.
Pratitishthati.
Okay. Yahava Yetam Yevam Veda. He whoever understands the Upanishadic teaching which has been given here in this manner, understands the teaching correctly, which is for whom, which discipline is prescribed for whom, understands, and thereby one who prepares, one takes care of one's growth, one who attains jnanam, evam veda, finally attains jnanam also. What happens to him? Papmanam apahatya. He becomes free from the hold of all forms of papams. Even punyam is papam for a if you see from the Vedanta standpoint, punyam also is papam. Anything which binds you is papam. Punyam is papam, papam is papam. The person becomes free from punya papams. And what is the root cause of the papam? Ajnanam. So he becomes free from the hold of ignorance, because ignorance is no more there for him. Ignorance has been resolved. Once ignorance is resolved, ignorance caused wrong notions resolve. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, notions all resolve. Thereby, this person becomes free from all forms of punya papams for good. No more sanchitam. My God, a huge bundle of sanchitam he becomes free from. How? By exhausting all punya papams? No, not by exhausting. Sanchitam is still there, but for this person, no sanchitam. Why? I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. That notion is not there. See, when do you have punyam and papam? Only if you think you are enjoyer, you have punya papam. It's all in thinking, wrong thinking. The wrong thinking is now corrected. The perspective has changed. Now you see, the person sees what is that only truth which doesn't come and go. Unchangeable, unchanging truth is abstract consciousness implied by the term Atma and Brahma. Apart from that consciousness, everything is transient, nothing is permanent. Everything comes and goes in consciousness. This is the fact. There's no I, there's no universe. Where are you going to identify yourself with? What are you going to identify yourself with? Where is punyam and papam sitting for you? If you see yourself as that reality, in fact, you are the reality. Everything else is the reality, essentially. And everything goes. Nothing can be prevented from undergoing changes here. That's how order is. So for that person who sees the fact of what one is essentially, there's no doership, there's no enjoyership. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. Where is that? All wrong notions go along with the notions. All punya, sanchitam goes. Sanchitam resolves. Agami resolves. Papmanam apahatya. Paradha also is lived objectively, unafflictedly. when the Paradha gets exhausted, what happens? Anante swarge loke jaye pratitishthati. This person remains established in Brahman. He remains as Brahma. He was Brahma, he continues to remain as Brahma. What has gone now after Jnanam? Nothing has gone. He was already before also, he was Brahma. Now also he is Brahma. In between he had the problem of wrong perception. And all wrong motions are resolved. Now he is free. Okay? And here the word Anante Swarge Loke. Anante means what? That limitless reality. The reality which is of the nature of limitlessness. Implied by the term Brahma. And here the word Swarge Loke is used. Please see that word. Swarge Loke. Swarga Lokaka we understood as Punya Palam. Now Upanishad is saying Swarga Loka is Jnana Palam. Therefore here the word Swarga Loka means Brahma. Very careful here, okay? The word Swarga Lokaka here means Brahma. Swarge Loke. And what is Swarge Loke means? Brahmani. Absolute, abstract reality which is of the nature of limitlessness, thereby implied by the term Brahma. In that Brahma, Anante, in limitless reality, Brahma. And this is what? Jaya. Jaya means the most exalted, the most superior, greatest is Jaya. Adjective, mantra itself has the absolute reality, the most exalted reality, the most superior reality, the greatest reality. There's nothing which is greater than, more superior to that reality. Jaya. Jaya, adjective. Anante, two adjectives. Swarge Loke, it is Brahma. This person remains established in, he remains as Brahma. Pratitishthati. He remains as Brahma means again no more. Somebody asked me one day, after Jnanam, after attaining Moksha, is it possible for that person again to forget, again to become Ajnani? No. Once you attain Jnanam, again you will not become Ajnani. Again samsara is not possible. Pratitishthati, pratitishthati, Upanishad repeats to emphasize the fact. Pratitishthati, pratitishthati, remains established in Brahma, means what? Remains as Brahma. Why does he remain as Brahma? Because he's always has been Brahma. Only he did not know, only there was no knowledge. Always this person has been Brahma. In fact, always everything has been essentially Brahma. Always everything is essentially Brahma. Okay, what was Brahma, what is Brahma, what's going to be also will be Brahma. What is going to be in future also what? Brahma. Understand? Brahma does not come and go. What is Brahma? Most abstract, subtlest reality, all pervasive reality, obtaining in the form of pure knowledge, which is of the nature of limitlessness, implied by the term Brahma, which alone obtains as the Swarupam of every knower, obtaining in every mind, as the innermost self of all the beings, that Atma, having discovered that Atma in this manner, as unfolded here, by being prepared for this vision, such a person, when the Parabdha is exhausted, he becomes free from all forms of Punya Pamsana Jnanam, and he remains as Brahma. The most exalted, greatest, limitless reality. Anante Jaye Swarge Loke Pratitishthati. Pratitishthati, Upanishad repeats to emphasize the fact, no, he does not come back, he remains as Brahma. I mean, these things can be not simply exaggerating, but making you see how, especially the 8th mantra, we can elaborate on tapaha, dharma, damaha, karma, etc. You must wonder why, even Bhagavad Gita, it is said all Upanishads are likened to cows. And there Bhagavad Gita's milk extracted from that cow, those cows. And here Shastram says, Brahma Vidya Kau, which stands on the four legs of disciplines, Shamaha, Dhamaha, etc. Otherwise, Brahma Vidya is impossible. Here you can validate all forms of disciplines, even rituals, singing, bhajans, kirtans, prayer, worship, exercises, food habits, the activities, our entertainments, how we keep, where we engage our minds, how we keep us entertained is very important. You are all very fortunate. Don't waste time watching these other unwanted programs on televisions. No time. Really very fortunate. Promise, Swamiji. People, very, very fortunate people. You are all brahmacharis, brahmacharinis who are here as part of this organization. You do not know, I really see how we are well protected here. Otherwise, outside. Because for a person to prepare oneself for jnanam, I said jnanam is easy. Preparing the mind involves a tremendous amount of effort. And that doesn't happen unless you are in a place like this where you involve yourself in activities. The programs are already charted out. This is the only way one can uplift oneself gradually. Really. So, this Upanishad is over. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Om Aapyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranas Chakshushrotramatho Balamindriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Asva Nirakaranam Me Astu Tadatmani Irateya Upanishatsu Dharmaste Mahi Santu Te Mahi Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Keneshitam Patati Manaha Preshitam. I'm thankful to all of you to have given me the opportunity to be with Shastra. You know, Shastra teaching, when you study, I'm with Shastra as well as a teacher. Always we mutually help. Help is always mutual.